Welcome to Pod Summit. We're here today with Ed Colligan, President and Chief Executive Officer at Palm Inc. I first met Ed in 1986 when he joined Radius as one of the first handful of employees, and really our second marketing person after Alain Rossman. Ed, during his tenure at Radius, did product management. He did Marcom, really built the Radius brand. He helped us put our international distribution network in place and did anything else that was required at any given time. He was there, I think, for probably 5 to 6 years, from 86 to 1992. In 1992, he joined a little startup called Palm Computing that at the time had no product and was pretty much unknown in the industry. A couple of years after that, they introduced a category-defining product, which is the Palm Pilot. And the rest, as they say, is history, although fairly complicated history in the case of Palm, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So, Ed, welcome.
Thank you, Mike. Great to be here.
Welcome, Edward.
Thank you, sir.
In the interest of full disclosure, I guess there's also some connection between Bud and Ed.
Maybe yes, I've known Ed since 1961. And we are brothers.
All right. So, Ed, it took Palm 4 years, I think, from the time it was founded till the time that you guys introduced the pilot. In between, there were a bunch of products that, as Steve Jobs used to like to say, washed up on the shore like dead fish, including the Newton. So talk a little bit about, people seem to understand that the next thing after laptop computers was going to be little handheld devices, but they had no idea what they were going to be good for and how they were going to be used. So talk about how you guys got there with the product.
Yeah, I think... Look, a lot of startups, you got to be really flexible when you start a company. You don't always know exactly how it's going to pan out. And when Jeff started Palm, Jeff Hawkins started Palm. He thought that he knew the future of personal computing was mobile. He didn't know exactly how it was going to play out. In fact, the company was originally started as a software company. We started doing software for other people's handheld devices. Like at the time, there was the HP 200LX, the Scion devices, the Newton was going to come out. I mean, there are a lot of things kind of floating around. And it looked like a trend. The fact is that it's really hard to build a business doing add-on products for things that don't sell. So, you know, it took us a couple years to figure that out, basically. During the time, though, that we were doing the add-on software, a couple things became very clear. One was that people wanted to connect these devices to their PCs. And one of the add-on pieces of software that we created was a thing called Palm Connect. Which connected an HP 200LX and Scions and Newtons and other things, and the Zoomer, which was our wonderful product.
I remember that.
The Zoomer to the PC. And one of the epiphanies that came out of that was, you know, more than 50% of the people who bought these devices bought this add-on piece of software. So we thought, oh, that's interesting. People really want to connect them to PCs. But that could never really develop into a full business. And so what happened was, at some point after those products failed, you know, the Newton and the Zoomer and a lot of companies were really struggling in the space. We estimated about $1 billion worth of investment had gone into it from various venture capitalists. After those products had failed, we essentially came to the conclusion the only way to really make it happen was to do it ourselves. And that was the point where Jeff kind of sat down and said, okay, what are the things that are really critical in this space, and what is it going to take to create a winning product? And he had a few really key attributes, one of which was this connection to the PC. And that drove a lot of design elements of the product. Because we connected to the PC, it could have less memory. It could have a smaller screen because we knew that data entry would happen there. It could have a different data entry methodology because we knew data entry would happen with the keyboard on the PC and we could transfer information. So all of that changed kind of the dynamics of it. And I'd say he learned something through that experimentation with all those software products for a bunch of, you know, failed devices. But it ended up coalescing, I think, some of his thinking around it. Of course, he also believed it needed to be a certain form factor and a price point and things like that, some elements that we executed against.
And was it all some combination of gut feel and what you learned from previous efforts, or did you do focus groups or any more formal research?
Yeah, no, we absolutely did some focus groups. They were more around, you know, testing those concepts. You can't ever do focus groups to invent new products and categories. People, yeah. You don't walk into a focus group and people under, you know, hey, what do you think about this? And they come up with some epiphany about a new market opportunity. You can't depend on others to do that. But what you can do is you can test some of your basic concepts and make sure that what you're thinking is actually at least understandable by the public.
Ed, you mentioned the Newton and lots of other products that are no longer around, but yeah, I think one of the challenges when you enter a new market with a new product like that is educating the market. You know, it's like you're mentioning focus groups. You know, no one really knows yet. Mm-hmm. How do you go about educating the market, and how did you guys do that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to me, one of the strong lessons learned there is really focus. And even today, when we look at launching new products, you know, I try to drive the team to just get more and more and more narrow about who the real initial target is. It doesn't mean that the whole opportunity isn't ultimately there, but you have to start somewhere and you have to be successful somewhere. One of the other things that happened because of this connection to the PC, if you remember, the Newton was going to be the product for your mother, right? I mean, it was going to be this whole new computing paradigm. They're going to sell $1 trillion worth of them, right? Because it was going to change everything about computing. And the whole idea was that the person who wasn't using computers was going to buy it because it was going to be so accessible because of the pen.
Handwriting.
Right, right. And our thing was, no, you know, one of the things we did to constrain our thinking a little bit was because it was connected to the PC, we essentially said, okay, we're only going to sell to people who are buying PCs, okay? And when we first thought about that, we thought, oh, that's kind of constraining. And then, you know, we sat in the room going, but wait a minute, that was 120 million people last year, you know, and we haven't sold anything yet. So sometimes things that look constraining, if you just think them through and say, okay, this is still a huge market. And when we're done selling to those 120 million people, we can figure out the next step, but let's start there. And even from there, we tried to narrow it in. Okay, we're only gonna support PCs, not Macs or whatever. You know, we tried to really keep narrowing it to a point where then that affected a lot of our launch mechanisms, how we went about it. Like, for instance, we launched the product at a conference called Demo, which at the time was not well known, but was very industry insider conference. And we decided that we needed to get that PC industry kind of interested and get that buzz going there. And that was a real tactical, you know, decision that had, you know, strategic implications. We focused on PC magazines. We positioned it as an accessory to a PC, so the people, when they thought about the pricing of it, they said, oh, well, I'm buying a PC for $2,000. Boy, $299 seems like a cheap thing for another little computer that's an accessory to my PC compared to, at the time, it was like a CD-ROM player or other things they could buy for their PC. So it changed the whole context of it. And I think, again, it's really important to just make sure you really focus who your real target is.
So you mentioned the price point, which in those days was a sixth or a tenth of what a PC cost.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to get to considerable unit volumes for it to be interesting. So what were some of the sales and marketing challenges getting to the kind of volumes that you needed to get to?
Well, you know, starting from scratch, you name it, you know, the fundamental messaging around the product and positioning, a channel. You know, we had no retail relationships at all to speak of. You know, what was the roadmap? How are we going to, you know, drive the product out, you know, further? What were the next generation products? You know, we had developed a whole operating system, as well as the fundamental hardware and all the application set. So we also wanted to develop a developer community around that and try to extend that. But, you know, we were trying to stay out of the kind of, crosshairs of companies like Microsoft and AT&T and Apple and other people who were out saying they were establishing the whole next platform. So we didn't focus much on the platform. So, you know, it was a set of, you know, decisions around that about where to focus your efforts. And then, you know, our launch efforts, really what we did initially was because we didn't have a lot of distribution clout, we decided to narrow the funnel. One of the things you learn about retail is that velocity matters, okay? There's our original VP of sales here was a guy named Pat McVeigh. And Pat always said, man, velocity, Ed, velocity, we got to, you know, so what we did, and to create velocity, right, you know, just like in a river, when it gets to a point where it's more narrow down the river, you get a higher velocity of water flow. And so we went to an exclusive distribution relationship originally, because we wanted Circuit City to just have a hot product at Circuit City. And we knew if it became hot at Circuit City, it would be hot at Best Buy next, because they watch each other a lot. And so it was a way to kind of create some velocity, and it really did. I mean, Circuit City got every initial order, right? And it looked bigger than it was, really, in the marketplace. And that ended up getting other distribution deals done and kept moving it forward. We've done the same thing here with the Trio. We started with Sprint. We said, we got to get off the ground. We got to get Sprint going. So we got Sprint going, and then we took it from there.
Speaking of distribution and retail distribution, there are a number of Trio and Palm stores in airports now. How does that fit into the overall distribution mix?
I look at it, you know, when we started the Palm stores, it was part distribution, just, you know, from a knowledge, you know, having knowledgeable people at the point of where a lot of our customers were. It's difficult to maintain a trained, you know, force in a, you know, Circuit City or Best Buy. We knew we could have a high quality experience at those places. And to me, it was as much a marketing effort as anything. And what we tried to do really with those Palm stores is make sure they were at least break even, that we, you know, because then it was like a marketing vehicle that was essentially free for all intents and purposes. And we've done better than that. They're actually quite successful. And what we try to do is just make sure we focus where the traffic was. And so airports, high traffic, high, you know, good demographic malls. And we, you know, we've kept it pretty constrained relative to that and haven't taken it too much further than that at this point.
But you're not planning a big rollout like Apple stores or anything like that?
No, not tomorrow, no.
So in years past, you were a PDA company in the minds of most people. Today, most people would probably describe you as a mobile phone company. Is that a major... course change, or would you say it's the natural evolution of the business? And how do you see things going forward?
That's a great question. I think it is a natural evolution, but it was a fundamental course change. You know, I mean, one of the things I'm most proud of over the last couple of years is really transforming this company from being, you know, what was essentially standalone handheld computers in completely different distribution channels, to very sophisticated wireless computing devices that are running a wide range of applications in a completely different distribution channel with a completely different set of customers, and managing to do that while putting together 11 consecutive quarters of profitability and growing the top line by 25%. I just really think the team has, you know, executed extremely well. And it is the evolution of that, the technology. It was inevitable. When we originally did the pilot, well, for sure, when we originally did handspring products, when we originally did the visor, if you remember, they had a springboard slot in it, the expansion slot.
Yep.
The original modules that we kind of had as little blocks, you know, for that expansion slot when we originally thought of it, were all radio modules. We knew we wanted to build an integrated kind of cellular somehow device. And at that time, the network technologies were just not there, just not ready for prime time relative to data access to applications and information. And so we've been incrementing our way through that technology curve since 96, you know, really. Handspring was 98. So since 98, basically. And now it's come to fruition, really. Now you really do have pretty ubiquitous high bandwidth wireless networks, and we've, you know, made that transition. But it has really been a fundamental transformation of the business, I would say.
Yeah, I suppose the other big environmental change is it used to be you and the customer, maybe the channel in between, and now they're these guys called the carriers.
Huge. I mean, that is a huge change. That's when I talk about a new set of customers. We used to sell to Best Buy and Circuit City. We still do some of our handheld computing products, but now we have to sell to those carrier partners. And they have a very different dynamic, and they add a very different dynamic to the marketplace. They have huge power over the business model, essentially, because of the recurring revenues that they generate over years of a contract you sign up. They have this ability to provide subsidies to various products, and that's why there's no such thing as a free phone. They don't get those for free. They pay for those, and they buy them down to attract people to buy onto their network, and that dynamic really has an impact. And they also have to certify and qualify your devices to run on the network, and that's another barrier to entry that exists for the average company that wants to come into this space.